Friends, I'm happy to announce that Straight Talk has partnered with Blue Line Roasting Company to bring you delicious coffee to enjoy while you listen to this podcast. Blue Line Roasting Company also serves our first responders by giving a portion of all net proceeds to numerous organizations who support them. Order today at BlueLineRoasting.com. That's BlueLineRoasting.com. And don't forget, when you join the Straight Shooter VIP Club, you'll receive a free coffee sample and a mug, plus invitations to private podcast events.
26 officers lost their lives while on duty in 2022.
Blue lives matter in America.
Welcome to another edition of the Straight Talk Podcast with your host, America Sheriff David Clark. Let's see, where do I want to start here? Let me make a few comments on the Republican Party. I'm talking nationally for the most part. And touch a little bit on the primary for the Republican nomination for president coming up in November, at least the elections coming up in November. I don't know, and like many of you, I don't know what the heck is going on with Nikki Haley. She appears to be on a political suicide mission, a kamikaze mission, because she's destroying her credibility. She's destroying her integrity, and she's destroying any chance in the future for political office, because she's creating enemies within the Republican base. Forget about the Republican Party, the Republican base. It's pretty evident to everybody, except the never Trumpers and the establishment folks. It's pretty evident that outside of some strange phenomena happening, that Donald Trump is going to win to secure the nomination for the Republican Party for president of the United States. You know, she appears to be, to me anyway, you know, the modern day version of Don Quixote in heels. I don't know what her objective is. When she's interviewed, all she says is, "I'm going to keep fighting on." And we know she's being funded by Democrats, wealthy Democrats, to stay in this race. But it just doesn't make a lot of sense politically for someone. And this is not her last hurrah. I mean, if she were to do the smart thing, not the right thing, the smart thing, she'd get out now and save up what goodwill she has left, which isn't much, for some future run for president of the United States. The heck with a cabinet position. She's done all that. But Donald Trump is only going to be president should he win, and I'm not saying that's a foregone conclusion, but he's only going to be president for 4 years. And actually, the 2028 campaign starts in 2026, right after the midterms. So she's talking 2 years, and then she can start in earnest for her quest to become the nominee for 2028, but that's going to be gone. And maybe she doesn't want it. Maybe she just wants to spend the rest of her life getting rich, sitting on boards, you know, working for big donors, traveling the country, giving speeches, slamming Donald Trump, especially once he's in office, back in office, I should say. And I do want to warn people, and I've done this before, because, you know, there's this pesky little thing called overconfidence, and it can jump up and bite you. You know, there's a few enemies of success. One of them is hubris, born of arrogance. One is complacency, and the third is division from within. And the Republican Party is doing well on the division from within situation. You look at this previous this vote from last week to impeach Alejandro Mayorkas, and it fell short by the Republican Party. Basically three, but then a fourth jumped in a procedural move to save it. But three Republicans, including Wisconsin's own Mike Gallagher, who I know, who's an apostate, but three of them voted along with every Democrat. Democrats understand this about politics. They understand the one team, one goal philosophy, and they also understand team together. They always seem to be able to hold ranks. when it comes to this sort of political warfare. And that's what this is. It's political warfare. But the Republican Party, it's been like herding cats. And I get tired of all this. Well, Republicans are independent-minded and you know, they don't all think alike. All that nonsense. This is political warfare, ladies and gentlemen. It's team together time. And they should have been able to do this. So, you know, I look at some of the other things they've done. I think it was a grave mistake. And I said that on one of my previous podcasts. I thought it was a grave mistake for the Republicans to expel George Santos from the House of Representatives. I said that should be up to his voters, the voters of his district. If they want to recall him, let them recall him. They elected him. It's not up to you or I who should represent that congressional district in New York, Nassau County. It's up to the voters of that county. But now these high-minded, virtue-signaling Republicans sought to expel George Santos. At least George Santos, and this was after he announced he wouldn't run for re-election, so the term only lasts another 10 months or so. And it was a reliable Republican vote. Now, who knows what he would have been in the 10 months that were remaining. Maybe he would go off course. But the fact is, they have a razor-thin margin anyway. They can't afford to lose positions. So there was a vote there that they did not have going into this impeachment procedure on Mayorkas. That's that division from within. That is that you know, and the Republicans have shown time and time again to do this. Political cannibalism, they eat their own. It was okay to shun George Santos. That's okay. But to have expelled him when they only had a razor-thin margin anyway in the House of Representatives, I think was dumb. It was beyond arrogance. It was beyond virtue signaling. It was dumb. But anyway, let's not get too overconfident that Donald Trump is a shoo-in for the Republican nomination, because no matter what, and let's be honest, there are more registered Democrats in these swing states, the ones that are probably going to decide this presidential race in November, there are more registered Democrats and Republican. And the Democrats know how to get out the vote. Getting out the vote machine is unparalleled. And then you throw in the cheating factor. So forget about the polls. I'll say that over and over and over again going into November. Forget about the polls, because the polls cannot determine the all-important variable of turnout. What's the turnout going to be? I don't care that they poll 1,000, you know, likely voters or registered voters. They can't determine how many are going to actually show up and vote. And here's another thing polls cannot account for, the cheat factor. So forget about what the polls are saying. And finally, we got rid of Rona Romney McDaniel, who has agreed to step down after the South Carolina primary from the chair of the RNC. The RNC is screwed up anyway. But it goes along with my philosophy that if we're ever going to straighten this out, meaning this conservative movement, the heck with the Republicans. I'm a conservative, not a Republican. Those are two different things. I vote Republican, but I'm a conservative. But if we're ever going to straighten this out, we have to get the wrong people off the bus. We have to get the right people on the bus. We have to get the right people in the right seats and then move the bus. You cannot skip any of those elements. You can't. Right now, we're moving the bus with the wrong people on board. All these rhinos, all these faux conservatives, these useless people like Romney McDaniel, Rona, and people like, you know, the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, he's got to be next. He's got to go. He was behind that failed border thing, and good thing it failed, but he got suckered in. When Chuck Schumer said, I've never worked closer with a Republican colleague than Mitch McConnell. That said all I needed to hear. McConnell's an apostate. He needs to go. And his colleagues, some of them are calling for Mitch to step down or be replaced, but they elected him after the midterms. They elected him their leader, Senate Minority Leader. He's been there for a long time as the leader. He was the Senate Majority Leader not too long ago. So I don't want to hear from them. And they can get him out if they want to. Heck, they got rid of Kevin McCarthy. They got rid of John Boehner. So all of these Republican senators who are now, including Ted Cruz, who I like, who are saying, yeah, I think he needs to be replaced. I think he needs to go. Then start the movement. Rally the troops. Get people to go along and take a vote and oust him because he's not going to step down. He might not run for re-election, and I don't think he's up until 2026. He's not going to step down. He's fine just where he is. Being the minority leader, he's fine with it. And all this work together, I'm not working together with people that are trying to slit my throat. I'm not working with them. That's foolhardy. Work together. Give me a break. So this is, you know, like I said, we got to get the wrong people off the bus and the right people on the bus. I still believe in Mike Johnson. He was handed a ball of crap. And he needs time to get this damn thing together. It's not going to happen overnight. I say so far so good, but I reserve the right to change my opinion of Mike Johnson as time goes on. I kick the tires on these people. And you should too. Let's kick the tires. Give him a chance. Meaning let him get his legs underneath him. But at some point he's going to have to demonstrate that he can twist arms and get all the Republicans in the House to move in the same direction. How come Nancy Pelosi was able to do that? Nobody ever broke ranks when she was the Speaker of the House. Heads would have rolled. She demonstrated that when she gave several of her members like closet-sized offices as a sign that you went off the rails. You got to be put in a corner. You got to be punished. That's the kind of stuff. And you know what? Her caucus, the Democrats, and all, they were afraid of her. So we need Mike Johnson to instill fear in these people. Because so far, and even before he became Speaker, his bona fides are pretty cool, being a conservative, pretty cool. So we'll see what happens there, but we got a long way to go. We have to get people out to vote. We have to get people out. And I know we did it in 2020. Trump got 10 million more votes than he did in 2016. He got more votes than any president in U.S. history up for re-election, which is indicative to me that some chicanery went on from the other side. And I'm not afraid to say that. I know we're called election denial. You can call me anything you want. I'm beyond the name-calling stuff. Who cares? I know what I am. Many of you know who and what I am. I don't worry about these clowns that are trying to besmirch me and my integrity, and I don't worry about that. All right, let's move on here. I want to touch on the war in Gaza. Still goes on in earnest and good. I am so proud of Benjamin Netanyahu. I've always liked him. He's the right man at the right time to be leading the state of Israel. He is staying the course. He's made it clear what the objectives are of this military operation. And it's one thing you don't always get from leaders of the Western world when they go into these types of things? What's the true objective? And how long is it going to take? The American people need to know that. Congress needs to know that. How long is this going to take? I mean, within reason, you know, you can't predict, but it can't be endless. So Netanyahu's made it clear, and I stand with Israel unequivocally, unabashedly. He's made it clear what the objective is. They're going to eliminate Hamas. That's a clear objective. We're going to eliminate Hamas. We'll worry about the rest later in terms of, for example, what's going to happen with Gaza and who's going to govern and who. We'll worry about that later. It's going to be without Hamas around. Hamas is a terror organization, been recognized as a terrorist organization. So once again, you know, leaders of the West, but, you know, including Joe Biden, are trying to get Netanyahu to back down in Israel. Ceasefire and all this nonsense. Two-state solution they brought up again. I think it was Blinken, Secretary of State. We support a two-state. There can be no two-state solution. That's been proposed before. It's unworkable because you're dealing with terrorists in Hamas and Hezbollah. They'll never stand with any agreement. They've made it clear what their objective is. The destruction of the Jews from the river to the sea. Destruction, total destruction of the Jewish state. Why would anybody in their right mind, Blinken, Biden, other people in the Middle East, why would you try to negotiate with that? It's mindless. So one of the things that I said in previous podcasts, and I've said it on social media too. By the way, you should follow me on social media. On X, it's at Sheriff Clark, C-L-A-R-K-E. On Instagram, I think it's Sheriff David Clark, but just put it in the search. You'll find me on Instagram and on Facebook. I'm most active on X. But I said in a previous post some time ago, Israel cannot allow Hamas to use the hostages as leverage, as a bargaining chip. You cannot do it. That's why they took hostages, for leverage later on. If you give in to letting Hamas use the Israeli hostages, and now there's a report that 31 more are dead, but you know, it's not confirmed. And if you allow them to use hostages as leverage, they'll do it again. And anybody else thinking about it, including in the United States, some terror organization, some terror cell takes hostages, they'll do it again. They say, hey, it works. That's why they took hostages. You know, hostages are a burden. When you take hostages, but it was worth it to Hamas to take those hostages. You cannot do it. And I understand, look, the families of the people who are being held hostage by Hamas, I understand they want their loved ones back. I get it. I really do. I'm not saying the heck with it, too bad. I'm not saying that. But Netanyahu's made it very clear that that's not going to work. There'll be no ceasefire in exchange for hostages. That happened once. And Hamas got more of their prisoners, not hostages, back than Israel got hostages. It should have made it clear the first time, all of them. Not some of them, all of them. And then we'll give you yours. That's fair. I think that's reasonable. But here's what Hamas wants. They want more all the prisoners released being held in Israel who've been convicted of crimes. They want all of them. They want the Israeli military, Israeli Defense Forces, to pull out of Gaza and a permanent ceasefire for Israeli hostages. And Netanyahu just gave a clear statement and said, no, it's not going to happen. And good for him, because they're well on their way to victory. They're well on their way to eliminating Hamas. And that doesn't mean Hamas won't be replaced by some other terror group. That's not the point. You're going to get rid of this one. It's like when the United States got rid of Al-Qaeda. Yeah, some more terror groups popped up. ISIS and some other ones. But they got rid of Al-Qaeda. And so that's the goal here. And Netanyahu made it clear. He made it clear, too. He said, victory is within reach. He says, we're not talking years. We're talking months. They're getting ready for another big ground offensive into the last stronghold that Hamas has in the Gaza Strip. I just want to read here from this article here from Reuters. Netanyahu rejects Gaza ceasefire, offers pledges to defeat Hamas. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Wednesday rejected a proposal for a Gaza war truce by Hamas, saying victory was within reach, and only total defeat of the movement that rules the blockaded strip would ensure Israel's security. Quote from Bibi. We are on a path to total victory. Victory is within reach, he said at a televised press briefing. See, he's keeping the country notified. That's important. And the Israeli government, keep them notified. What the heck's going on? Where are we at? We can't determine that in Ukraine. Biden hasn't told us where we're at. Zelensky hasn't told us where we're at. So back to the quote here, he said in a televised statement, only total victory will allow us to restore security in Israel, both in the north and in the south. The Israeli premier was speaking a day after Hamas had said it delivered its responses to a proposed ceasefire deal for Gaza drawn up by U.S. and Israeli spy chiefs and delivered to Hamas last week by Qatar and Egyptian mediators. Here's Hamas's response. They offered a ceasefire in Gaza for 4.5 months, during which all hostages would be released, Israel would withdraw its forces from the Gaza Strip, and an agreement would be reached to end the war. By paving a path for the return of the remaining 136 hostages Israel says are being held in Gaza, the offer meets one of Israel's declared war goals. However, it challenges Israel's main pledge to keep fighting until Hamas is destroyed. So Netanyahu, another quote for him, the day after is the day after Hamas. All of Hamas, Netanyahu told a news conference, saying Israel's military had killed or wounded more than half of Hamas's armed forces in the 4 months of war. And so now you got this clown, Biden, who held a news conference recently, this past week, and he said that Israel's continued ground offensive into this last stronghold in Hamas was, this was his words, Biden, it was over the top. Let me tell you, Mr. President, what's over the top. Over the top was October 7th. When unprovoked, Hamas went into Israel, into neighborhoods, killed 1,200 people, beheaded people, Jews, raped women, Jewish women, raped elderly women, and took people hostage. That, Mr. President, was over the top. Israel, who has the right to defend itself, declared war. They went through the process. They declared war, made it clear before they started their offensive. Warned Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip, warned them, get out, we're coming in. They let them know ahead of time, dropped leaflets, old school, telling them, get out, we're coming. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to be ugly. Hamas didn't do that. They didn't know Israel know and give them time. Hey, we're going to mount an attack, a terrorist attack. That's not war. I mean, we use that phrase that I do anyway, that Hamas declared war on Israel, but they didn't declare it. So Biden still gets in the way. Blinken's still over there trying to negotiate a ceasefire. No. Here's what Blinken and Biden should be doing and saying. They should get Hamas to surrender, raise the white flag. When that happens, as Netanyahu said, the day after is when it'll end, when Hamas is gone. Either surrender or be killed. Hamas could surrender this afternoon. And I believe, I don't know this, but I believe Netanyahu would start ramping this thing down with an announcement by the remaining Hamas terrorists. We surrender. Nothing ambiguous like, well, you know, we're ready to negotiate. No, we surrender. It's up to Hamas. It's not up to Israel to change course. It's up to Hamas. The ball is in their court, and not for this thing they offered. Is it counter to Blinken's nonsense? Cease fighting, give us our prisoners, and no more attacking us. Hamas? No. That's not a surrender. They're using the hostages as leverage, the Israeli hostages. Israel's not holding any Palestinian hostages. So that's my take on that. Keep on keeping on, Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm proud of you. Now I want to turn the page to the situation going on in the Federal District, Washington, D.C., that's getting very little. I didn't say no. Very little play, and it's the crime wave that has overtaken the Federal District. Violent crime wave. And I know that useless Mayor Muriel Bowser has proposed, you know, and she's just trying to save her political hide, you know, toughening of sanctions and laws against these criminals. But it doesn't go far enough. It's all superficial nonsense. It's the same stuff, you know, jobs programs and all this nonsense. She doesn't talk about getting these people into jails, locking them up and keeping them away from the law-abiding public in Washington, D.C. And it's grown so out of control that the Congress, the Republicans, have proposed a series of bills that would toughen a little bit sanctions on these criminal creeps in Washington, D.C., but it doesn't go far enough either. It doesn't lengthen jail and prison sentences like they need to. But anyway, you know, this is problematic, and it's claiming good people. And it brings to mind for me some of these other concepts like gun-free zones, which are killing fields. That's all they are. And it brings to, for me anyway, to light the fact that law-abiding people in the federal district can't equip themselves to be able to defend themselves against this crime wave. Because for the most part, you can't carry a firearm. You can't even carry like mace or pepper spray in the federal district if you're on federal property. And that encompasses most of Washington, D.C. anyway. You can't defend yourself. You got to depend on the Metropolitan Police, who are shorthanded and nowhere to be found until it's too late, and they just come and take the report. So I'm going to read from this article, just kind of set the stage as to what's going on. This is from the Washington Times. Washington's expansive gun-free zones disarm workers caught in the D.C. crime wave. But amid an explosion of violent carjackings and armed thefts in the district's downtown, workers who have permits to carry concealed handguns are still forced to go unarmed throughout the city. Second Amendment advocates say the district's expansive restrictions on where citizens can legally bear arms are contributing to the city's crime problem. Here's a quote. Obviously, the laws in Washington, D.C. are not favorable to gun rights or self-defense or self-protection. And these carjackings are a great example of how stupid these laws are, Second Amendment Foundation Executive VP Alan Gottlieb told the Washington Times. Quote, we've seen around the country where people are allowed to carry concealed firearms, where they prevented carjackings in large numbers. This isn't going to happen in Washington, D.C. with the laws they have in place, he said. The crime epidemic infecting the nation's capital includes a rash of carjackings, but gun law advocates say the widespread restrictions on guns in parking lots and garages keep many motorists unarmed when driving to and from work. A recent carjacking rampage grabbed headlines, 11-hour violent crime spree throughout the district and its Maryland suburbs left two men dead, including former Trump administration official Michael Gill, 56 years old. Law enforcement later gunned down the suspect, 28-year-old Artel Cunningham. According to the Metropolitan Police, the number of carjackings, listen to this, folks. This is according to police department statistics. The number of carjackings has increased for the sixth consecutive years with 959 reported incidents in 2023. Carjackings in the federal district. That's around federal buildings, monuments, offices. In the federal district, you can't exercise your Second Amendment right. So it says here the city's leaders insist that the strict gun laws are a boon to public safety. Now here's where it's about to get stupid, ladies and gentlemen. Oye Ololiwu, one of the district's shadow representatives in Congress, says, listen to this, more legal guns on the street would exacerbate the current rise in shootings. What the hell is he talking about? He goes on to say, a quote from this goof, once you enter a weapon into the situation, things get more dangerous. It's the criminal that introduces a weapon into the situation. Of course it makes it more dangerous. So this guy tells the Times, quote, if somebody has a weapon and they know I have a weapon, they're more likely to use that weapon because they know I have one. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the dumbest statement I have ever heard in my life, and I don't use hyperbole, and I've been around a long time. That is just plain stupid. So, Mr. Gill, the former Trump aide that was shot and killed in a carjacking incident, he was unarmed, but the bad guy was armed and shot and killed him. The bad guy introduced a weapon into it and made it more dangerous. The fact that Gill was not armed did not make it less dangerous. And there's also a Washington Commanders football player last spring who was shot in a street robbery, shot in the leg. He was unarmed. Did that make it less dangerous? You see why I said that guy's statement? It was one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life. Now let me show you what happens when the good guy has a gun in these situations. Recently, there was a 13-year-old crook. 13, ladies and gentlemen. And a 12-year-old who tried to carjack a guy sitting in his car in the federal district. The guy sitting in the car, I'll get into more of him later, got out as ordered. He was armed. He pulled his gun and shot and killed the 13-year-old. Hooray. So this goes against this goof congressman from the federal district who says, if good guys have a gun, that makes the situation more dangerous. No, it makes the situation safer for the law-abiding citizen. Matter of fact, like most of these shootings, they happen because the crook knows the victim is probably not armed. If the crook thought the victim was armed, he wouldn't attack. He wouldn't do it. It's like that everywhere. They don't go into stores to hold up the 7-Eleven or the CVS. Or the Rite Aid, they don't go in there because they think the clerk's got a gun. They know the clerk doesn't have a gun because it's against policy for these stores. And then they got that big sign on the door, gun-free zone, gun prohibited. They don't give a damn about that. They know it's a safe place to operate for them, not for the victim. So anyway, back to this shooting of this 13-year-old. According to police, the 12-year-old and the 13-year-old were in the 600 block of D Street Northwest around 10 p.m. Saturday when they tried to carjack, I said this guy, he was an off-duty federal security officer, off-duty, but he was armed. He's one of the few that's allowed to be armed, military and police in the federal district. That right should be available to all law-abiding citizens in the federal district. It would make it safer. So it says the officer was sitting in his car for his shift to start when the pair approached him and demanded that he get out. Police say one of the suspects was holding his hand in his front waistband pocket as if he had a gun. As the security officer got out of his car, he pulled his own legally owned firearm and shot Tony. The teen was taken to a hospital where he died. Oh, according to this goof congressman, though, you know, if the victim has a gun, it's going to make it more dangerous. And the perpetrator is more likely to use the gun if he thinks the victim is armed. That is a dumb statement. That's how mindless these anti-gunners are. These anti-Second Amendment people. And I still can't believe that in the federal district, the Constitution doesn't apply. In Washington, D.C. So anyway, they were able to get this 12-year-old accomplice in custody. I'm going to read here from the Gill incident. Mike Gill, his former Trump aide, who was not armed. Mike Gill, former aide of former President Donald Trump, was shot Monday during a carjacking incident in Washington, D.C. In a statement, his wife said he died on Saturday. He was the second person to die when a man committed or tried to commit several carjackings. People are being killed by these carjackers. And yet this clown from Washington, D.C., this shadow congressman, because they don't have voting rights in the Congress, they don't get to vote. It's not a state, that's why. And that's another argument for another day as to whether D.C. should have representation in the Congress. But anyway, you know, this goof from D.C. says, hey, or Wally Wu, that's his name, he says would exacerbate the situation of law-abiding citizens carried guns. No, it wouldn't. Anyway, Gill is shot. He was the second person to die when a man committed or tried to commit several carjackings. The man was killed on Tuesday by police. Early Monday evening, Mike Gill drove his Jeep to Washington, D.C. to pick up his wife, Christina. She worked at a law office near Mount Vernon Square. He called her and informed her that he was waiting downstairs. When his wife reached downstairs, she found him on a sidewalk. Authorities said that a man had climbed into his vehicle and shot him. Gill was taken to the hospital. He died on Saturday, according to a statement released by his wife. On Saturday night, Christina Gill released a statement announcing the passing away of her husband. She mentioned that his unexpected departure had left a void in their life and more. She thanked family, friends, and the community for their love and support. Thank you for respecting our privacy as we mourn the loss of this incredible man. He was the second person to die due to crimes committed by a person whom authorities named as Artel Cunningham, who, and this is my editorial comment here, thankfully is dead. He was fatally shot by police. I don't know. You be the judge. I'm going to put this in your hands. Are we better off? And are we more safe and secure if we're able to defend ourselves? I've said, as my time as sheriff, and I've continued in my time after, your personal safety is your responsibility. It is not the responsibility of the government or the police. It's your responsibility first. Their responsibility second. But until we get rid of this mindless thought that law-abiding people can't be trusted or shouldn't be trusted, we should leave this up to the government. Never, ladies and gentlemen. Never allow your personal safety to be the responsibility of the government. Never. At least that's how I look at it. Thanks for joining me. When you talk about race, crime, and politics, some folks lose sleep over this, but not me, because I sleep just fine on my Giza Dream Sheets and Pillow from MyPillow, especially this new 2.0. If you haven't gotten yours yet, you are missing out. Just go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Clark, that's C-L-A-R-K-E, and save up to 66% off. The direct link is also available on my website, AmericaSheriff.com. Get a great night's sleep so we can continue the fight. Friends, I want to thank you for listening to today's episode of Straight Talk with yours truly, America Sheriff David Clark. And a special thank you also goes out to our sponsors. My goal, as always, is to break down these complex and many times controversial issues and bring it to you straight with a little dose of common sense, no media bias, no talking points, just truth. And this podcast would not be possible without your support. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please leave a review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite place to listen. And please share this message of common sense on social media. For more content, be sure to follow me on Truth Social, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And just a reminder, we'd love for you to join our Straight Shooters VIP podcast club for only $5 per month. And with that membership, you'll receive invitations to attend private podcast events throughout the year as a VIP guest when we come to your town. Plus, if you join today, you'll also receive a free coffee mug and a sample of our private label coffee, as long as supplies last. Subscribe and join at AmericaSheriff.com. This podcast is brought to you by AmericaSheriff.com with executive producer Judy Wilkinson of J.L. Wilkinson Consulting and producer Josh Wentz in partnership with our friends at Bulldog Media. If you are interested in partnering with Straight Talk Podcast or having me speak in your area, please contact Judy at jlwilkinsonconsulting@gmail.com, 706-518-2116. That's jlwilkinsonconsulting@gmail.com. Phone number 706-518-2116.